things, but it's not like there's...
Loretta Lynch, too, was really big on that in New York, right?
Yes, she was huge on that. So, you know, it's not like there's... Yeah, Trump has said and done a lot of things that are just utterly head-shaking, but it's not, you know, what's the baseline? That's, you know, that was the point I was trying to make in that USA Today piece. It's kind of like, yeah, Trump, you know, there's been so much fear-mongering going on since Woodrow Wilson. And, you know, there are so many people, so many of Trump's critics now are acting like their previous presidents were a mix of Jesus and George Washington. And it's like, you know, well, aside from Jimmy Carter, well, not even Carter, but no, I mean, it's, you know, we've had a lot of bad presidents who were demagogues. And it's like that doesn't mean people should defer or trust or anything like that towards Donald Trump. But so many of the folks, you know, so many of the criticisms I'm hearing is as if people were born yesterday.
Yeah. No, it's really true. And the thing is, especially that, you know, for those of us keeping track of these previous crises in history, especially with the hindsight and the 2020 and all of that, you see just how completely ridiculous some of this stuff is. Like the Zimmerman telegram, where, look, everybody, the Germans promised Mexico they're going to help reinvade America and conquer the entire Southwest and take back California and Utah and Arizona and New Mexico and all of that for Mexico. We got to stop them in Germany before they're on our shores. I mean, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life, and I've heard a lot of ridiculous things, but that's how they got us into World War One.
Yep, yep.
The worst thing that ever happened. That caused every other worst thing that ever happened that happened after that, like the rise of Stalin and Mao and Hitler and the American Empire.
Yep, some major negatives.
And then, well, so what are some of your other favorites? How about the North Koreans or the Vietnamese communists? If they win, then what's going to happen to us, Jim?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's presidents have pushed so many fear buttons in order to drag the nation into war, and they you know, going back to the sinking of the Maine in 1898. President Roosevelt did the same starting in 1940, if not before then. So there are so many different levels where they where presidents greatly exaggerate the perils. And sometimes there were actual perils. I mean, there were a lot of things about Hitler and that were very profoundly evil. FDR was kind of painting with a broad brush, and there was probably no reason. President Roosevelt was painting with a broad brush and was acting as if the Japanese were as evil as a Nazi regime. And it's like, yeah. And some of the efforts to try to portray the Japanese as a threat to the mainland U.S. were way overboard, and that's how Roosevelt justified the concentration camps for Japanese Americans. So, but no, I mean this is a pattern that goes way back, and people should be very wary of Trump, and certainly if Trump tries to drag the nation into war. But it's interesting, some of the stuff I've seen online, it's like, so many people are all set to, you know, well, okay, about an hour before this interview, I saw online that the White House has decided not to appoint Elliot Abrams.
Oh, really? Thank God.
Yes. So you hadn't heard that?
No, I had not heard that. Thank you.
Okay.
For telling
right.
Me that.
Yeah. Great. So, this is great. I mean, this is the most positive foreign policy development in the Trump administration since the government of Yemen prohibited the U.S. from doing any more ground attacks there.
Yeah.
So, no, I mean, which is not to say that Trump is not going to be a massive screw-up. Personally, I'm glad that the U.S. is not massively bombing Syria right now. I think if Hillary Clinton had been elected, that the U.S. might be bombing all the so-called anti-aircraft installations in the city of Damascus, sort of like we bombed the hell out of Baghdad before we invaded there. I think that there's, in short term, less carnage, though certainly it could get a lot worse.
Yeah, well, that's certainly true. And now, you know, I think the worst fear-mongering going on now is all very much tied to Trump, but it ain't him. It's against him and the conflation of him with Vladimir Putin. And Hillary Clinton herself, his opponent in the election last summer, said that he was a puppet of Vladimir Putin. And then the acting director of the CIA, Michael Morell, said the same thing in the New York Times, or was it the Washington Post? I think it was the Times, which is, you know, the agenda-setting media. This is a big deal. They're saying, well, you know, he might be an unwitting puppet. But, and then ever since then, there's all the different hype about, well, Russia's behind all the fake news, and Russia's behind hacking the DNC and Podesta's emails and leaking them to WikiLeaks, and Russia fixed the election for Donald Trump. And to me, it's so reminiscent, Jim, of what it was like living through 2002, where everybody is just repeating all this stuff like minor birds, and none of them know that it's true. They all know that they don't know it's true. They just go, oh, yeah, we all heard this, and we're all saying this. So, you know, one of the lines back in 2002, I would say to people, well, everything that they've said so far has been debunked, right? You know, all the aluminum tubes and this and that, that's already debunked. And then everybody would say the exact same thing. Well, I'm sure that the president has secret information that we don't know about. And that, in other words, if they're doing this, there must be a good reason. And so I'll just rationalize it that it must be true. And you have that same kind of thinking going on, especially with the Democrats. But, of course, a lot of the centrist and neoconservative Republicans who don't like Trump, too, who already have a grudge against Russia. And especially, man, if they can if they can corral the so-called liberals to be in that hawkish against Russia that easily, then I guess the entire consensus of the American people can't be that far behind if Trump ever does want to turn on him and bring the right wing with him. And people are willing to just suspend disbelief. It's like watching The Empire Strikes Back and going, yeah, I believe in Chewbacca for a minute. Fine. You want me to believe that the best thing is confrontation with Russia? Okay. As long as that's what partisanship dictates, let's go with it, everybody. And there, it works. They do it. It's incredible.
Well, let's see how it plays out. I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to know what the heck Trump is going to do. And I'm, you know, he said a number of things that, you know, made, you know, that were jaw dropping. And, but he's done a few things that were like, oh, that was better than I expected. So like his choice for the Supreme Court nomination. So, and he's shown a learning curve at times. Other things, he's not shown a learning curve. So, again, the fact he's not going with Elliot Abrams is like, that's something that has been fixated a lot of libertarians and anti-war activists for the last 8-10 days.
Got and, that right, yeah.
Yep, and it looks like, okay, so that's good news. So,
yeah, and I mean, yeah, for people not familiar, go check out especially rightweb.com, or is it .org? I think it's, yeah. Anyway, Tom Barry and them, they got a great write-up on him there, and he's, you know, directly married into the Podhoretz family, and is one of the more dangerous of the neoconservatives by his record. He's not just a writer like Crotham or something. He gets things done, very bad things often. So, yeah, that's really, really great news that that he didn't get the job there. But, yeah, so, yeah, it's nice to have a little bit of hope for change, I guess. After all, Obama really was better than John McCain. I mean, John McCain would have got us all killed in a nuclear war with Russia.
I agree.
You know,
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a long list of things which I have criticized Obama for, but a couple of things I give him credit for is he was not railroaded into going to war with Iran. When the Washington establishment, when the Washington Post, when both parties were just kind of hollering for war, President Obama just, you know, there was a lot of BS as far as some of the details on the Iran agreement, but it's a light years better than having an actual war. And that was Obama. So, you know, there was, I think he realized that, well, you know, this isn't going to go so well. It's too bad that he greatly increased the Afghanistan war for no good reason. The thing in Libya was a complete fiasco, but that was with the Hillary Clinton and Susan Rice and that other woman that dragged it, you know, basically stampeded him into that. So, thank God we didn't go to war with Iran.
Well, did you see I don't know if Obama even okayed this. I mean, I guess we should assume he did, but they sent 300 more Marines to the Helmand province in southern Afghanistan in the last week of Obama's presidency. And then the general in charge of that war, Nicholson, testified before John McCain's Armed Services Committee in the Senate yesterday and said, oh, yeah, we definitely need thousands more troops to, and not just for training, to advise and assist, he said, which means embed with and lead the Afghan National Army in their, quote, stalemate with the Taliban, which never goes away. So it really is like 2009. They're basically already trying to jam Trump, as Obama complained later to Jeffrey Goldberg, when they jammed me. Well, he let them, of course. But it's already on. The generals are already trying to box in President Trump on Afghanistan, it looks like to me, man.
Well, and it'll be interesting. That's a real bellwether as far as what to expect from his administration.
Right.
It's also possible that Trump will see how he's Trump will see how things worked out with that raid in Yemen 10, 12 days ago. It was such a complete devil and killed so many innocent civilians. And that maybe he'll say, ooh, you know, somebody fed me wrong information. Trump doesn't seem like the type that's very forgiving. So maybe that would make him a little more cautious from doing really stupid things in the future. I'm not betting the mortgage money on that, but...
That's what I'm hoping for, too, is that he will come very quickly to resent these guys because their promises never come true, ever. And... you know, I was thinking it's sort of like a mini Bay of Pigs, right? Because that's the story of the Bay of Pigs, is that after that disaster, Kennedy.
That's a good analogy. I'd not thought of that.
Yeah, I mean, this would be a much smaller version of that. It's not like he's going to fire the head of the CIA and all of this stuff kind of thing. But this is sort of the thing where they told him, yeah, it's going to be great, and then it wasn't great. And like you're saying, yeah, we can – maybe his personality will be such that, hey, quit trying to jam me on Afghanistan. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll pull the troops out before I – let you make me double them or something, you know. Hopefully it'll just be a personal problem for him and that'll work in our favor. I mean, I don't think he's ever going to have a Trump doctrine on Afghanistan that we could hope for of being, you know, a non-interventionist, go ahead and cut and run now kind of a policy. But maybe if he just gets mad enough as a Secretary of Defense over it, that they'll have a little fight and he'll order the end of the thing.
Well, I mean, it's interesting looking at some of his campaign speeches, and even after the campaign speeches, I think in November, December, there were a number of times where he said, look, you know, these foreign escapades have worked out very badly. The U.S. has been failing at this, and we need to, you know, stop wasting money and lives doing it. So whether that will be his guide star, I don't know. But there have been times where he said things. Take a couple of steps back. You were mentioning the John McCain, hearing that he was chairing. There was someone in the Washington Post who was snapping at the White House spokesman because he had criticized McCain's view on the military and stuff like that. And they were saying, well, this just shows that the Trump team doesn't learn, because in 2015, Trump mocked McCain, even though he was a war hero POW. And the Post seemed to think that people should defer to McCain's judgment on military matters. And I'm just thinking, oh, my. I mean, John, you know, I don't know that there's ever been a war that John McCain was not in favor of.
Yeah. Or the Post, at least,
well,
you know,
yeah,
in this century, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the...
was Obama's big mistake. I mean, he could have said, because it wasn't just Petraeus and Gates that were rolling him. It was McCain. And certainly, politically speaking, he could have spun it that way, that this is all John McCain's doing, basically. And he could have just said, look, this senator's a sore loser. I beat him fair and square. And the reason I did is because you, the American people, wanted me, not him, making these calls. And so, sorry, senator, sit down. We heard you, but you're wrong and you lose. And we're not going to do what you say. And watch, I'm going to get reelected on that. And instead, he caved in. So,
well, yeah, and you had some folks in the White House. You had Vice President Biden, from what I read, was totally opposed to the Afghan surge. That he understood it was BS, and he was outspoken and just kind of did everything he could except resign. Or maybe he didn't go even nearly that far, push that hard. But from the things which I read, he was definitely not in favor. That he was outspokenly opposed internally to the Afghan surge, which was such a disaster.
Right. Well, and of course, he had General Eikenberry, who had been the general in charge of the war, who was at that time the ambassador to Afghanistan, who wrote these memos saying, forget it, Mr. President, you can't do it, because the whole theory is based on relying on Karzai and his government to be, you know, in charge here and to take up for us when we're done, and that's not going to work. We might as well call it off now. And that should have been all the cover he needed. I mean, even though he was a State Department weenie at that point, he was a 3- or 4-star general, I guess a 3-star general, who'd been in charge of the Afghan war. So, you know, he could have not just invoked Biden, but he could have invoked Eikenberry and just said, listen, the people who know about this best, other than Gates, the Republican that he shouldn't have kept, are telling me forget it. But he didn't do that.
Well, and there was also an internal, a confidential CIA analysis that showed that there'd be almost no benefit from a surge in the troops because of the because of the situation with the Afghan government, a lot of different factors. But the CIA judgment was just profoundly negative as far as a proposed surge.
Yep. Well, and they went again anyway, just because of politics. And after all, and I got a paragraph just like this in my book. It was probably a smart decision, right? Because the Republicans were placated. Okay, well, at least he escalated the Afghan war. They didn't have that issue to attack him on. He didn't have to deal with Petraeus and Gates resigning and weakening him and that kind of thing. And all the Obama voters, they had so much hope and change in their eyes that they didn't even notice or care at all that he'd escalated the war. And it didn't really hurt him with his base when it came to the election of 2012 at all. So,
well, there were some that it hurt him with, but not many, and it's, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the honorable exceptions accepted.
Yep,
but,
yep.
Yep. So that's the real shame of it, is that really doing the wrong thing was the smart thing for him to do in terms of public choice theory, and I guess that's how it goes, you know.
Well,
gotta look out for number one, Jim.
Well, it's yep, and ugly business.
Hey, listen, I'm so glad that you're such a great writer and that you'll come on my show and talk to me about the stuff that you write.
Well, thanks so much for your kind words, Scott, and thanks for mentioning the books. And I'm happy to hear you back on the air. I'm glad you've got a new institute and that you're raising hell online and elsewhere.
Well, thanks very much, Jim. Good to talk to you again, man.
All right. Take it easy.
All right, y'all. That's the great Jim Bovard. I didn't say this at the beginning. JimBovard.com. He's got a website where he keeps all the stuff that he writes. And he writes for USA Today, and I think still sometimes for the Washington Times and the Wall Street Journal. And, you know, James is, he's sort of, I don't want to compare him to anyone else, but he's an investigative columnist is what he is. He really does all the original research and original reporting, but then he makes some opinion columns anyway, so you can really stick it to him. And he's really such a talented writer, too. I think you guys will love Public Policy Hooligan. And they're all really great, but my favorite really is Attention Deficit Democracy. And it's probably a decade old now, but it's not outdated. It's great. You got to read Attention Deficit Democracy. So there. How do you like that? I like Jim. Here he is at USA Today. Hey, wait a minute. Trump's fear-mongering isn't new. And at FFF.org, the Future Freedom Foundation, FFF.org, $1 billion of federally funded paranoia. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show. ScottHorton.org is my website where I keep 4,300 and something interviews for you to listen to if you want. And you can follow me on Twitter at Scott Horton Show. Thanks. Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. Which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. Hey, y'all, Scott here for Rye Guys t-shirts. Rye Guys, that's W-R-Y, guys.com. Great, irreverent, thought-provoking t-shirts upholding a pro-freedom perspective. Inspired by such classic humorists as Mark Twain, H.L. Mencken, and Oscar Wilde, they invoke the wit and wisdom of the past to satirize modern myths. These high-quality shirts for men and women look good and feel good, and they make great gifts. Use the coupon code SCOTT for 15% off. Rye Guys t-shirts at ryguys.com. That's W-R-Y-guys.com. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation.
And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co.